Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder, science-based paganism. This is a podcast for non-theist, earth-revering pagans, and to talk about all of the various things that we incorporate into our practices and into our experiences of living. I'm one of your hosts, Mark.
And I'm Yucca. Welcome.
So today, we're going to talk about altars or focuses, which are the same thing, and we'll explain why some people use one word and some people use the other word.
Yeah, so our first question is, what is an altar and or focus? So do you want to jump into that, Mark?
I can, sure.
Yeah.
I developed the word focus for an altar-like space. And I use that word because, to me, there are connotative meanings to the word altar, and they imply worship or sacrifice, neither of which are things that I do in my spiritual practice. So I wanted to get away from all that. I didn't want to be like an altar to a deity or something like that, because I don't believe in them. What I wanted was to really describe what it is that I do with my focus, which is that I put on it objects that have symbolic meaning for me. To me, a focus or an altar is a space in which objects are placed for purposes of their metaphorical and symbolic meaning rather than for practical purposes. They're meant to be displayed, they're meant to be witnessed, they're meant to be experienced in an artistic sense rather than in a practical sense. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you?
Well, very similar for me. I do use the term altar. I also don't believe in any deities or perform worship or sacrifice in that way. But the word I don't have a distaste for it. It doesn't have that same connotation for me, even though I understand why it might for some people. So mm-hmm. It's something that I use, and it's something that I change throughout the seasons as the seasons are occurring. So there'll be some items that I will have on them that are almost always there, and then some that will change as the season goes through. So I might bring in a pine cone or a little pumpkin that we grew or something like that, that helps represent that change of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Oh, I was going to say, and the other thing is, while there have been times in my life where I've had a single altar, how it's been working out in my household right now is that there's kind of two different altar spaces.
Oh.
And one of them is set up in the kitchen, which is that the center of the home, the hearth of the home, and then mm-hmm. a more private one for the adults in the bathroom space. Because that's the only place where we ever have anything that resembles privacy. even then, parents with young children know that that's often not the case.
Yes.
But the altars have to be higher up. And hopefully the kids will get to participate in that when they're a little bit older. But right now, they're still at everything in your mouth stage.
Of course, anything that's a swallowing hazard has to be above their reach.
Yes. And just like your cat or dog, toddlers have an instinctual understanding of anything that is important. If you value something, then they want it. So.
Right. Of course.
Yeah, so we have the
understood.
Two.
I'm the oldest of seven children, and I've had this experience as well. I know what it's like. yes, so I only have the one altar space. It's a bookcase from which I've removed a single shelf. And so there's a double high space that I have put pictures on the inside of, and then the objects are there and so forth. And then there's another shelf down below it. So the big space is the world and life and experiencing of the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then below is the underworld and honored dead ancestors, fossils, bones, things like that.
Mm.
And so those, but it's all really one focus space. We do have some other horizontal surfaces in the house where we have put pine boughs or trimmings from our Yule tree and pyracantha berries at the appropriate time of the year. And we do other things at different times of the year, but that's much less formal. I imagine that if I were raising children, I would probably be more formal about really changing the decor for each of the stations of the Wheel of the Year, because subtleties are kind of lost on little children, and you really want them to get the meaning of these different times.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally understand why you would be doing that.
Yeah.
The other problem that we have is that we have tons of bookcases in this house. Not very many books. Our 21 cases of books are in a storage unit since we moved, but the shelves are entirely covered with museum pieces.
Mm.
I have rocks and minerals and shells and historical artifacts and a piece of wire from the Hindenburg and just all these things from history and from science and things that interest me. And many of them with little labels, just like in a museum. It would be a nightmare for your children. There's so many things they could put in their mouth and hurt themselves with.
Oh, they would love it. They would love it. Wonderful. We would be chasing them around, putting everything back.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. My house, I've joked about it before. My house is about the least childproof the world has ever seen. But I like living in a natural history museum. That's what I've chosen to do really since I was about 8 years old, when I would create these elaborate displays of minerals and fossils and seashells and all these things. So that's really how I choose to live. And it doesn't leave very much space for seasonal switching out.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, it's always important to me to have something that represents the season on my focus. Right now I have a colored stone egg in the primary place, the place of privilege in the center of the altar, and some little flowers that I've gathered from this time of year.
Wonderful. So in your home, is it your focus is a private thing for you, or is it something that you and your partner share? Do you each have your own?
Ah, great question. We sleep in separate rooms because I have sleep apnea and I snore really loudly. And Nemea has terrible sleep disturbance issues. It's very, very hard for her to sleep. So she actually has really elaborate altar spaces of her own in her room. They're beautiful, very different in style than mine, but beautiful and beautifully arranged.
Mm.
Sacred objects, and she has a little altar space to Durga, the Hindu goddess,
mm-hmm.
who is the defeater of nightmares. She's sort of your friend if you really have sleep issues. She's kind of on your side. So, you know, those kinds of things. So my focus is mine. Mm-hmm. It's specifically my kind of space. I mean, I have a photograph of her naked on mine. Because obviously she's a huge part of my life.
Of course.
But we have these separate spaces. And then in the common areas, like the living room, that's where we would do the seasonal things.
Hmm. Which are a little less formal, you were saying, right?
Right. I mean, we don't declare a day when, okay, today we're going to decorate for Yule, and we do that. And actually, Yule is probably a bad example because we do erect a tree and decorate it and all that kind of stuff. And we do a Yule log ceremony every year. And there are a lot of things that we formally do. But say for the spring equinox, we don't go and get the spring equinox stuff and decorate the house. We mm-hmm. we don't have that sort of formality to it. So your question, though, was how do we use an altar or a focus?
Oh, I think before we get there, we were going to talk about how we make it, right?
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Well, this varies so radically from person to person. It's really fascinating. In the Atheopaganism Facebook group, we have an ongoing thread that's collecting a gallery of people's focus spaces. And they range from the most austere sort of Zen Buddhist kind of things with a single candle and a stone and some raked sand and maybe a bonsai tree or something to these Byzantine elaborate things like what I do, which is, you know, every meaningful metaphor that I find in my life must be crammed into this space for one reason or another. So that's really interesting. Obviously, it's a matter of personal choice. But where it starts is, what objects and symbols do you find meaningful? Because that's what a focus or altar is. It's an assemblage, an artistic assemblage of those things that speak to you, that you find poignant in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can change a little over time. And so an altar can be a living space where something new is coming into your life, or you want something new in your life. And so you put the objects that are mean, that are symbolic of that, into your focus space. You may have put a stone from a walk on the beach that was very meaningful to you at the time that it happened. And then 4 years later, you can't remember where that rock came from, and it's time to toss it back out in the garden, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really about when I step before this assemblage, is there a chorus of meaning that comes to me psychologically? Is there a is there a music that this artistic assemblage communicates?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my take on how you make an altar or a focus. How about you?
Very similar. I find, so in the past, I used to really appreciate the framework of the four or the five elements. That's something that I've very much drifted away from as the years have gone on. I still love the imagery of it, though. Mm-hmm. So when I initially set up the spaces, they often will have still have a little bit of that form of having the, you know, the fire and the water and wind mm-hmm. and earth, and
sure.
and I like center spirit as the middle. They then start to evolve on their own for me, that mm-hmm. you know, things get taken out, things get added in, and they change with the seasons. And I also, about every 8 weeks or so, I have to change things around in the whole house. My husband teases me about it, that, oh, the 8 weeks, yep. You know, I move around where the chairs are, the desk, and so I get into this, like, reorganizing, cleaning phase, and things will, everything in the house, often starting with the altar spaces, will change at that point. So it'll all get kind of cleaned up, and then it'll take 8 weeks of deteriorating and going back into a messy state, and then it'll get cleaned up again.
It sounds like a good cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. I get teased for it, but...
Well, you know...
Lovingly teased.
Our partners have to find excuses to tease us, because that's just the nature of partnership, right?
It is. Keep us laughing and not too serious.
Yes. As the Ethiopagan principle says, I laugh frequently, including at myself.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of perspective and not taking yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
The thing with altar spaces or focuses that I find is really interesting, other than just the diversity, which is so extraordinary. I mean, when you look at people's spaces, you learn so much about them, just in terms of what their motivations are spiritually, what their aesthetic is. But there's something more about the activation of it. How do I say this? Well, my altar feels dormant when the candles aren't lit on them.
Okay.
When I light the candles on my focus, there are two large pillar candles. The one in the underworld is short so that it doesn't start a fire with the shelf above it. So I say the honored dead and the sacred earth. Those are the things that I say when I light those candles. And then with that flickering flame, and I agree, I think fire is a really powerful thing to have on a focused space.
Mm-hmm.
I always have a chalice of water as well. And you can certainly find, I mean, there are plenty of rocks and fossils and things on my focus, as well as feathers and sheaves of grain and things like that. So all of those elements are there. But I don't really organize my thinking around the four Greek classical elements in that way. I used to. When I was first getting into paganism, I thought of them as phase states of matter.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, solid, liquid, gaseous, and plasma. Or catalyzed into energy was my idea about fire. And so that kind of works.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's a discredited model. And I have a really hard time with subscribing to pseudoscientific discredited models. I don't subscribe to astrology. You know, I think astronomy does a better job. I think chemistry does a better job than alchemy of describing the world and predicting outcomes and explaining the phenomena that we see. So that said, there is something very powerful about pouring the water into the chalice or lighting the candle on the focus and experiencing that. I just spend a lot of time sitting in my room in the evenings with all the lights off, just with that dancing candle there. It's a very sacred kind of space, and I enjoy being in it.
There's something very primal about watching fire, being present with fire.
Yes.
And it's It's deep in us.
Oh, it's baked in, yeah, for sure. It's really funny to watch. If you go to a beach, which is more less of a challenge for me than it is for you, but if you go somewhere and you light a fire, all the monkeys come and gather around the fire. All the humans, they come and they gather around the fire. They can't help it. Total strangers come walking up and go, "Hey, what are you doing?" And, you know, you start having this kind of social situation. It's inevitable, in kind of the same way that the smell of cooking meat, mm-hmm, over a fire is similarly. I mean, I've talked to vegans who tell me, you know, that smell is just overpoweringly good.
Yeah,
I'm not going to eat it because that's not my philosophy. But wow, the smell of searing meat smells awfully good.
Yeah. My city has a tradition where there's a Christmas Eve walk. They have farolitos, which are the bags with the candles inside, and they walk up and down the street. I'm in Santa Fe, and there'll be bonfires, and that's where that same experience you're talking about with the street. I mean, with the beaches, people will gather around.
Yes.
Often with some hot cider or other,
or beer or
other liquid substances,
whatever it is. Yes, you know, some kind of fermented consciousness altering substance.
Yes.
Like we do, because that's what we humans, that's how we roll.
Yeah,
we go to fires and we go to places where water is in motion. We go to waterfalls, we go to the ocean, we go to places where rivers are running rapidly and you can hear that white noise sound. Both of those apparently say to us at some very deep visceral level, this is where life happens. You can survive here. If you have fire, if you have water, you're going to be okay. At least that's my theory.
Caves as well. But our homes serve the purpose of caves in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Yes.
That sheltered, protected sense.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And then combining that with the fire, the flickering on the walls. And
Have you read this theory about the paintings in the Chauvet cave in France? That many of the paintings show sort of multiple images of animals, sort of stuttered ahead. And the theory is that the flickering of the fire made it look like the animals were in motion.
I have not heard that before, but I would believe it.
I would too.
I can picture the paintings that you're talking about. Yeah.
And I mean, to me, what that says about the artistic capacities of those early humans is really extraordinary. I mean, you have to think, this wasn't just anybody that showed up with a piece of charcoal and doodled on the wall. These were people who specialized and were very, very talented and had the capacity to observe what light did, even in these very dark conditions. Fascinating, super fascinating. And speaking of altars and focuses, they had those too. There's that, what is it called? Les something. I want to say Les Aristides, but I know that's not correct. I think it begins with an A, where there are modeled clay bison that are clustered around a central stone in the midst of a big chamber that has a lot of paintings in it, and where they found footprints of children still preserved around this rock.
Oh, so the children were circling the rock? The footprints of them going around in a circle?
It appears the children were dancing around the rock.
Wow.
Because they were landing on the balls of their feet.
Okay.
So they were either running really fast, which is hard to do in a tight circle, or they were dancing. Yeah, I don't remember where that is, but I mean, I read that and I was just so filled with joy. You know, yes, this is us. This is what humans do.
Yeah.
And we as pagans are about getting that back.
Yeah.
We've been on a long, weird, suffocating detour here in Western civilization. And what we really need to do is to gain more of that aliveness back into ourselves.
Yeah. And so altars are one of those ways to start forming those connections. Yeah.
Very much so. And what's great about a focus or an altar is it's always a work in progress. So if you're just starting out, if you feel timid about making a big splashy expression of yourself, just clear a space and put a few objects that feel meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
And a candle so that you can bring some specialness to it by lighting the candle.
If you can, but some people are in dorm spaces or true. Have restrictions and just do whatever you can. You know, yes. It's not going to be wrong because you can't have a candle or wrong because it's not facing the right direction. It's not about being right. It's about what has meaning for you.
Absolutely. That's really an important thing to point out. There's so much in modern paganism that sets up really kind of artificial rules about, well, this, you know, you must face this direction in order to relate to this element. And I mean, I hear about people who literally live to the west of the Great Lakes, you know, 200 yards from one of the Great Lakes, and they are still invoking water to the west across more than 2,000 miles of mostly desert in order to point at the Pacific Ocean. It boggles my mind. There was a time when pagan and indigenous practices arose, and they did that through paying attention to what was going on around us. And I really feel like modern paganism succeeds when it goes back to that ethic, that it's about paying attention to what's around us in the natural world.
Yeah. And we've spoken about this before with the Wheel of the Year as well, where for some people, the holidays certainly do not line up with what's happening in their season, and especially not when they're on the equator or the southern hemisphere.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I have a friend who moved to Chiang Mai, Thailand, and he actually is the person who first introduced me to paganism. And I'll be really fascinated to hear what he has to say about the Wheel of the Year now, because anything that involves freezing and snow is not happening in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Yeah.
So what's our next question?
I believe we are on how do we use our focuses or altars now?
Why don't you go first? I've got so many things.
Well, as I mentioned before, right now we have two main ones. And we have the one in the bathroom and then the one in the kitchen. And those are because those are the places that we spend a lot of time and are doing the meaningful things in our lives. So the bathroom is the more personal one for me. And I will use taking a shower as an important daily ritual in which I release stress and set intention. And we have a small, we don't have our bathroom's tiny. I think it's a 5 foot by 5, like a very small space. We have a little itty bitty shelf that has about enough room for the toothbrushes and then some of our special items. And when I get out of the shower, I will look at the space where I have the items that represent important things to me and take a moment to take a deep breath in, ground, which is also very important for me, do a deep breath in a ground. And then sometimes I'll touch one of the items and just think about its meaning. And then from there, step back into the rest of my day. Mm-hmm. So it's something to just a physical representation of whatever that intention or that value is.
Mm-hmm.
And the one in the kitchen is very similar, but it's a little bit more family-based. It's a little less personal. It's more about the intention for the whole family, for the whole group, and not me as a personal, as my own individual, but as a member of a group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll do that maybe when we take turns cooking, but when it's my turn cooking, I might do that, or cleaning up a lot.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I really relate to having very limited space. We're in a tiny apartment. It's a two-bedroom apartment, but it's still a tiny apartment. It's the same kind of thing. What I find I do with my focus now is I ground and invest my experience in living, because it's so laden with symbols and history and objects that come from times in my life and people that I love and things that are meaningful to me, that I can bring it whatever I'm experiencing, and there's something there that speaks to it. If someone that I care about dies, well, maybe it's time to add another picture to the underworld section of the focus, because that's where grief lives, and it's where remembrance lives.
Mm.
If something new and glorious and amazing has happened, well, maybe it's time to put that on the focus. I've got a copy of my book still there. It's been there since I first got copies of it in the middle of October. And it's still just kind of a miracle that I wrote a book. So there it is. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So when I come in from my day, whatever it is that I'm carrying emotionally is something that I feel I can kind of discharge into my focus.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's all psychological. It's not a physical energy. I don't pretend that it is. But psychological is still actual.
It is, yeah.
You know, our psychologies are real. We have experiences. And if I feel unburdened of my day, or like I've shared the excitement and the joy of my day into my focus, well, then it carries that much more of that the next time I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, I have a tarot deck on my focus. I do not see tarot as fortune telling. I see it as a very elaborate set of symbols, which, even though you're drawing them randomly, will speak to your subconscious and help you to understand things in different ways than you would have otherwise. So that's my understanding of tarot.
It'd be a great subject for the of great episode subject, yes, for us to tackle.
I think it would, yeah, the whole divination thing, I think, would be a great thing to talk about for another episode. So I draw a card every day, and I lean it up against. There's a section of branch on my focus that was sawed off of a dead tree that we took down to turn into a maypole at the sacred land up in Mendocino County. And this would have been in the early 90s. So I've had this little stub of branch for a long time, and it lives there. And so I lean the card up against it so it's visible. And that helps me to kind of frame what to think about in that day, you know, to be aware of particular qualities or possibilities in my living. Mm-hmm. So I do that every morning. It's not much of a daily ritual, but it's something, and it kind of grounds me and reminds me that I'm living this path. In the evening, as I said, I light the candles, and sometimes I do more formal rituals. I'll put on some ritually effective music, which would be another great podcast topic.
Yep.
Because there's a lot of really fantastic ritual music out there. And if you're doing solo rituals, you can't very well be drumming and singing and also doing your ritual stuff at the same time, unless you're a lot more talented than I am. it can be helpful to know possible artists that you can go to as good sources for ritual music. And so, you know, sometimes I will burn incense and I will intone words and wishes and maybe move things around on the focus in order to express a wish or an intention or an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the kind of thing that I do with my daily focus. At the Sabbaths, I will build a separate focus on a little table that we have, specifically for that, for the ritual celebration. And that will just be symbols that relate to the Sabbath holiday.
And that's is that a one-day thing for you? That focus will only be up for the day, or is it up for, you know, the week around it, or kind of depends?
Depends on the time of year. If we're talking about the February holiday, here it's almost certainly going to rain. Mm-hmm. So I'll take it down after doing whatever celebration I do. And I may not even do something outdoors. I may only do something indoors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the beginning of February is a pretty good indoor kind of time. certainly in where I live and in many other parts of the world. But if it's Hallows, for example, the big focus that we set up for my circle's Hallows ritual, we let that sit overnight. We leave the light burning in the jack-o'-lanterns. Mm-hmm. We let it sit overnight. And that is on the property of friends of mine who live in the Santa Cruz Mountains off the grid. And so it's surrounded by forest and really very beautiful. As you look from their house, you can see the jack-o'-lanterns flickering down there after we're done with our ritual. So it depends on the season. In my experience, having a focus in my house, in my life, is a way to remind myself that I'm walking the pagan path.
Mm.
And by the pagan path, I don't mean something that I got out of a book. I don't mean something that somebody else told me was a formula for how I had to be. Mm-hmm. What I mean is in full and rich and joyous engagement with living and with the natural world. And my focus reminds me of those things. Most of the objects that are on my focus are their natural objects, whether it's a sea urchin or a fossil or a set of deer horns.
Mm-hmm.
It's They're things that come from nature and that remind me of the beauty and the power and the inevitability of nature. And so I encourage people who are starting out to make a focus or altar, because it's a great way to start to understand your own inner landscape around metaphor and symbol.
Mm-hmm.
You will see, oh, this is what attracts me. This is what I find exciting. This is what I find beautiful. Don't want any of that. No, there's none of that's going in there. For example, I don't have anything that's plastic on my focus.
Mm-hmm.
I won't do it. I just don't have anything that's plastic on my focus because I have a bad feeling about plastic. And that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with putting something plastic on your focus, if it's meaningful to you. I just don't want to do it.
Yeah. So it informs you about yourself.
Yes.
That process.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And getting to know yourself is, of course, central to walking this path.
Hmm.
Because you aren't able to fully live in the expression of yourself until you know who you are. And so knowing who you are, coming to know more and more who you are, goes hand in hand with coming to know the nature of the world more and more. And to fall more and more in love with the cosmos and with the biosphere, like we do.
Beautiful. I think that's a wonderful place for us to finish up.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah. Well,
before we say goodbye, did you want to give our plug for this week?
Sure. We were just talking about it. We just had this thought. We've plugged the Atheopagan Community's chosen charity for 2020, which is the Indigenous Climate Action Network, before on this podcast, and I certainly encourage you to support them. But given what's going on right now with the COVID-19 virus, we feel that support for Doctors Without Borders is probably the best bang for your buck in terms of making something good happen in the world. Médecins Sans Frontières is a tremendously high integrity, risk-taking, courageous, powerful organization that sends doctors and other medical personnel into places that are very impoverished, very challenged, places that are hit by disasters. And with the COVID virus going crazy all over the world right now, those places that are most impoverished and have the least in the way of medical services are the most impacted of all of us. So let's not forget them. We'd really encourage you to support Doctors Without Borders at this time.
Thank you. And there will be a link in the description in the show notes.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Yucca, for another wonderful conversation. Thank you so much.